We are now recording, and this is Out Now with Aaron and Abe. I am Aaron, and as always, this is...
Abe, hello! How are you, Aaron?
I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm doing well. Thank you for asking.
Okay, good. We got that out of the way. Let's get down to business. Out Now is a film podcast where Abe and I normally discuss new movies weekly. However, every now and then, we like to discuss special bonus episodes, whether it's one of our fun commentary tracks or something completely different. It is a little different, but standard for about time of year that we are in. This is our Sundance recap.
Where we recap, talk about, recap.
Thank you. We talk about what happened at the Sundance Film Festival based on both the online availability for me as well as whatever guests we managed to get in here to talk about Sundance with us because they were able to go to said festival. And as usual, joining us from firstshowing.net, he's back in the States, but does he have diplomatic immunity? It's Alex Billington.
This is my like gunfire jumping through the American customs. He is returned. They let him in.
Oh my God! It's Jason Bourne.
Yeah. you're like whatever guest it comes, but I'm like, haven't we been doing this like 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah, we have. Exactly.
In fact, I'm always like, man, I really hope Aaron invites me. Otherwise, I'm just going to be talking to a wall.
You did bring it up before I brought it to you, which was nice. It saves me a trip.
Always good to get into the groove of things, you know.
It's nice to have you back on here, Alex. It's nice to see you. Nice to have you back. Back in the United States for now, but you can't get out of here soon enough, some would say. I am happy to have you back here. Excited to talk about Sundance with you. But what's up?
what's up?
Organic. Beautiful.
No, I actually, it is interesting because this is the one time in the year I am back here, and I have actually been physically attending in person.
Oh, that's great.
Park City experience. Actually, I did half Park City, half Salt Lake City, and seeing my family and trying not to get arrested and other things like that. So,
in that order, I hope.
Let's not get ahead of ourselves.
Well, let's just get right into what we're doing. No real show notes, just, you know, all the stuff that we've been doing here. There's some things coming up. First off, we did do David and I recorded a very fun David Lynch episode, very all-encompassing to celebrate the man's life. That should be available now by the time you hear this show. And let's see, we had our horror awards recently, which were also a lot of fun. And we'll have plenty of regular shows going on as well. So, you know, some quick show notes out of the way. Let's get into Sundance, though. Alex, you're there. Yes. I want to know, what was it like this year? What was the vibe of Sundance this year?
Absolutely horrible. No, I think I said that.
No.
It wasn't that bad. No, it's... You know, there were two articles written in both Hollywood Reporter and Variety, both discussing the like talk of the festival, which was it's moving, it's over, its era was over. And there was as much as I would give the trades crap for writing this, it was actually an accurate thing. Like, I sat next to a guy, and a lot of people had this little sticker on their badge that said "Keep Sundance in Utah." And I asked him about
it. Clarify what you're referring to.
Well, so Sundance is moving in 2027 officially. I guess they didn't strike a deal with Park City. Park City, Utah is this little ski town about 30, 45 minutes from Salt Lake City. It's been there for, I think, 30 years now. It's actually not the original Robert Redford owned Sundance Resort where the festival started and was. And it's a little town near there. And so for all these decades, it's been there. But many of us will also say, and this was another thing that was talked about at the festival this year, is we're really tired of Park City. The costs are crazy. The town itself seems to really care more about skiers and the ski season than they do about the festival. Because the festival is this like kind of like 10-day bonanza where all these Hollywood people come in and, you know, crap around and stomp on everything and then get out and, you know, whatever. Yeah. So the guy I sat next to who I started talking to, some rich dude, and he's like, I've been coming here for 35 years. And the Sundance conversation is the final choices are between Salt Lake City, which is where it happens anyway, but putting it fully there. And the other options are Cincinnati, Ohio, and Boulder, Colorado.
And
part of the discussion is like no one really knows how they got to these results. They're being very coy and private about it. I even talked to Eugene Hernandez. Like on the first day of the festival, I was like, oh, hey, I can't wait to find out. And he's like, even we don't know what we're doing. And I don't know if he was messing with me, but I was like, even the festival doesn't seem to know what's going on.
Yeah.
And this guy I talked to was kind of like, he said some interesting things, which is he's like, if it goes to Cincinnati, no one is going again. He's like, Hollywood, the industry won't go to Cincinnati. And I'm like, I mean, I kind of agree. I've never been there. I don't know why I would go, but if the festival's there, maybe.
Yeah,
I feel more centered towards Boulder because it continues to make the festival a mountain town festival. Whether or not that is where it ends up is a different story, because I also don't feel like Boulder has the charm of a city like Park City. But nonetheless, that was the main conversation at the festival. And then, of course, the other conversation intertwined with that is kind of like, what is the relevance of Sundance now? And are the films good enough for it to be a prominent festival? I always think by the end of the festival, if I've seen enough, there's going to be a handful of films that you're like, these are awesome films. Mm-hmm. I'm glad they showed them. Sundance does still have power. And you can even see it in the sales, like Sorry Baby sold recently, Together sold recently. So there are some sales happening that are like prestigious sales. But at the same time, you're kind of like, I think the question on a lot of people's mind in Park City, not in Salt Lake City, is it really still worth it to go there and watch the films there? Mm-hmm. And then another conversation, which I'm sure Aaron can bring up, is that there were some pirated films in the last week, not even pirated, but like TikTok leaking of footage from these films that were playing in the online component of the festival. And this has also made people think, well, why do they, you know, should they just cancel the online component entirely? And if so, then you go back to that question of, is it worth it to fly in and go to these screenings in person? My favorite example is I went to see Peter Hujar's Day. And it's this like 74-minute film made by a great filmmaker, Ira Socks. Mm-hmm. And it's like literally just two people chatting. And it's one location, but it's not one shot. There's a bunch of different shots.
Yeah.
And I just feel weird because I'm like, all these people who come to the screen, they pay $35 per ticket, or they have a, you know, $500 badge. And you're there to see this like 74-minute experimental cinema. And, you know, it ends. And you can just feel the audience be like, oh. Yeah. That's it? You know, like, I paid all this money for this? So that kind of is the air of the conversation of Sundance this year. Hmm. And it's kind of been brewing the last few years ever since the pandemic has hit. Mm-hmm. But this year was kind of like, and that's why these articles got written. This was like, actually, people were talking about this all the time, everywhere you went. It was a discussion in lines. It was a discussion when you're waiting. Honestly, I didn't even talk about films as much as I talked about what's happening with Sundance.
Right.
I mean, everything you're saying leads me more to thinking I've looked down on the people attending Sundance as opposed to the process of what a film festival is supposed to be about.
Yes.
Are there exorbitant prices? I assume so. I mean, I'm aware that that's especially for certain festivals like a Cannes or a Telluride or what have you.
Exactly. Where
there's, you know, the remoteness and the exclusivity and whatnot makes it whatever. But I mean, the idea of just giving up on something because it's hard, I mean, that seems to defy the purpose of like a film festival, especially for the smaller, especially, you know, not just for like the A-list celebrities that happen to do an indie this year, but like the people that did hard, you know, fight hard to make a film and get it actually into something as prestigious as something like Sundance. Yeah. And they ask about the relevance. It's one thing for Netflix to swoop in and say, here's $20 million for a movie you're not going to watch. But look at the best picture winners. You got Coda, Nomadland in the last 5 years that are Sundance films. I mean,
not Nomadland, but yeah, Coda.
I saw Nomadland at Sundance. Oh, yeah, it just played there, I guess.
Oh, okay. It was in Venice and then it went to Sundance, I guess.
Sounds right.
You're like, did it?
Because it's in the timeline.
Because it's 2020. It's time is flat. I have to think about that. But yeah, that sounds accurate. But I mean, you know, you can name many more best picture winners that, you know, originated at Sun Moonlight.
Yeah, of course.
But I mean, certainly there's a relevance to having this festival, let alone other festivals like that.
Yeah, and that's one of the things I always kind of remind people. I'm like, even the people who flew in from outside of America, like me or other international journalists, it's like there is still great films to see here.
Right.
And I think, because look, we could record a whole 2-hour podcast on film festivals in general, so I don't want to, you know, delve too much into this because I want to focus on the films. But one of the things that keeps coming to mind with me nowadays is like the importance of a film festival right now in this point in history comes down to what of the great films can they program in their lineup? What can they show here that another festival can't? And Sundance, being one of the prominent festivals, even regardless of where it is located or what is happening, still has that power. And it still has that draw. Like, I always love when I land and I go into Park City and I'm like, every year now, I'm always like, no one will come. And the next thing I know, I go to a screen and I'm like, here's 50 of my friends. Like, I see all these people. I'm like, everyone came. Or if not came, they're all on doing the online. And it is still relevant, as Aaron is saying. And that's... it's a conversation that's being had, but I don't think it, I think the two articles that were written were very harsh in trying to say it isn't relevant, but they're focusing on like this subjective opinion of, well, I didn't see any good films and the only good one, actually one of the articles was like the best film of Sundance is this 75 minute two people talking Peter Hujar's film. And I'm like, I don't agree with that at all because I saw a lot more better films than that, but that is the kind of, it is a conversation happening even if you don't agree with it, because it's just something that is being discussed in the industry.
And even on top of that, we're at a time where art is literally under attack, without having to go too far into that conversation, where yes, we should have these film festivals that promote art, let alone the topics that are contained. Like, there's so many films this year that deal with in the LGBTQ plus spectrum that I noticed like a few years ago, it's like a lot of black films. I'm like, cool. And I was like, LGBT's like, okay, that's cool too. Like, it's like, it doesn't seem a coincidence when that kind of thing happens, when there seems to be a recurring theme or a lot of the films that seem to have been selected for the festivals. And we're at a time when, you know, something as prestigious as Sundance can lend a hand and support in that kind of way, which I do think has plenty of importance in itself. Mm-hmm. But anyway,
let's get to it.
That is that is the right segue. Like, let's talk about the films then. Let's get
to the films. So I was able to online watch 14 movies. I don't know how I pulled that off, but I did. Alex, how many movies were you able to see?
Technically, right now I'm at like 52, but that's
holy cow.
Okay, so that's a couple more than me.
Yeah, but it's like 30 in person and then like 20 online so far.
All right. Well, let's see. We only have so much time. So how would you like to go about this? You want to go through like the ones that you appreciated the most, or the ones you just want to throw up the conversation?
Yeah, to be honest with you, Aaron, the whole time, this is why I love having this podcast with you. Like, the whole time I'm sitting at Sundance, I see something. I'm like, did Aaron see this? Because I want to know. And I'm also like genuinely worried. I'm like, I bet Aaron hated this, or like, I bet he loves this piece of crap, and I'm gonna have to like debate him about it. So now we get in here, and Abe's are like, referee, like,
hey! Yeah, exactly. I'm moderating. Like, hey, let's tone it down here, fellas. Keep it clean.
See, he let him like his films. No, so I on that note, I'm like actually way more curious to hear what you liked of your 14. Like, I would love to hear what you saw and what first things first, because this is what you did in the last year, like your priorities, and then if there's any that you really hated, then we have to be like, this one was bad.
Well, I'll say this. Of the films I saw, there was none that I really hated. There's still a couple that I was like, I probably didn't need to watch that, but like nothing that I really like out and out hated. Yeah, okay. But let's start with something positive, though. Let's start with the one that you recommended to me, or at least maybe made sure that I was aware of, which is Love, Brooklyn.
Yeah.
This film stars Andre Holland and Nicole Beharie and Wanda Wise.
Yes.
I want to say. And it's story set in Brooklyn. It deals with, I would say deals with gentrification, but it's certainly acknowledging the fact that there's gentrification that has taken place in New York, as many New York stories or surrounding black characters do. But it largely involves Andre Holland navigating a relationship with his current girlfriend who has a child and an ex-girlfriend who's still like a friend of his. And we kind of watch how this kind of scenario plays out. I like this movie quite a bit, Alex, just to put that out there for you. I'm aware that you're a fan of it as well. The main takeaway, beyond the fact that I'm a fan of Andre Holland and I like his choices, and I like seeing him do, like, we were big fans of Exhibiting Forgiveness last year as well, which is great. The major takeaway I had from this movie, aside from like the film itself, was the fact that this is like, it's a good black character study that just happens to involve black people, as opposed to be a movie that's about like any, you know, race in a way that's pointed or whatnot. And it's an indie. And I think back to like when movies like Love Jones were coming out in like the 90s, and that was like a backed studio film. And it's odd to me to think that now it's relegated to like an indie to see a movie like this, where it can't just be like, yeah, studio made a black story. That's not even relegated to just black film, but just in general, like romance dramas. Like, it has to be like an indie that premieres at a festival in order to get attention. It can't just be like a New Line decided to make this, which is odd. It's unfortunate to me, I guess. However, the movie, I'm happy that it did come together. I watched the Q&A afterwards as well. Looks like it was just really like, we're all friends and we all wanted to make this movie and we were passionate about it. And they did it. It was good. I enjoyed this movie quite a bit.
Yeah, actually, you know, it's funny you mentioned this intro, because I found out, and this is almost like, I wouldn't want to tell this to people, but it is the truth, is that it was written by like a white Jewish dude, and it's funny because you're like, it's such a black movie, and it's made by a black female filmmaker, which the biggest compliment I can give, it's also I guess it's produced, although he wasn't
Barry listed. Jenkins, like executive producer on it,
and it's presented by Steven Soderbergh, so it's like it's got these two prominent white guys involved in it, but it's not a white film at all. Like, I actually don't even, maybe there's like one white character in it briefly, but
there actually isn't any white
characters. And so that's fascinating, because of course the question I would ask the director is like, how much did you have to make it your own, or were you just literally doing this Jewish guy's script and like letting it be, because you can see the framework of I don't want to like give it all away, but you can see the framework of a dude living in Brooklyn dealing with two relationships being a pretty easy to set up. But what I love is how it brings you into their world, and it brings you into like very, I mean, again, as someone who once lived in New York, I was like, all these people have amazing apartments. I don't know how they're making money. Andre Holland's character is like a journalist, and he's like barely writing one article. And I was like, how is he paying his rent? But he's riding his bike around Brooklyn. And I found it very light and breezy in a way, like the Before Sunrise and Before Sunset movies are, where it's just this kind of like beautifully shot, takes you into Brooklyn vibe. You're kind of just like flowing with these characters. There's a lot of conversations back and forth. It's not as deep as the conversations in those two movies, but it is like, you know, you're stuck up in this little triangle with them and going.
It's a movie about
them.
People. Just people being people.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Rachel Abigail Holder is the director on this film.
Yeah, she's fantastic. Like, I get now, I'm like, Soderbergh, I get it. I'd be like, give her money, man. Let her make whatever she wants. She's
Soderbergh, apparently he came in and just helped financing after it struggled a little bit there.
She mentioned in the intro, she was like, Steven, thank you for everything. So I also just kind of thought, I've read some other critics who've been like, oh, the relationship, they're like the what's happening in it isn't very deep. And I'm like, I kind of like that. I haven't been in this myself, but I've had friends who have been in that dynamic of you have two women and one is kind of you're still attached to, one is you're kind of sleeping with, but you don't know what to do with. And you're kind of like back and forth between them trying to decide what to do. And it's almost a little bit of a coming of age with Andre Holland. So I like that kind of aspect of what he's going through and kind of deciding what to do with his life while enjoying Brooklyn and watching Brooklyn change.
I agree. And yeah, you mentioned Andre Holland when you messaged me about the movie, and I didn't realize Nicole Beharie was also in it before I turned it on. And I like Nicole Beharie. I think she's quite strong. So
yeah.
I was happy all around with this one. And yeah, I mean, tweets their own as far as what they want out of a movie, but in terms of like the depth of what's taking place, I mean, not every movie necessarily needs to have some, you know, a deeper meaning to really explore the nature of relationships or what have you to work. And, you know, again, that's neither here nor there as far as like why did they like this movie or did not like this movie, but from my perspective, I wasn't looking at this thinking, oh yeah, this is a solid relationship story, if only it had more to say about the rest of America. It's like, no, I didn't need that. You know what I mean, it's the movie that it is.
True.
What's next? What do you want to bring up something?
I want to bring up another one of my favorites. This is Together. Fortunately, it's not on the online segment because it was listed as like it's a midnight premiere in the midnight section, and they were like, I think there's like one online movie in the midnight.
There was only, it was what Didn't Die, which I thought was okay.
For 30 seconds on that one, Didn't Die is like this cool kind of clever. It is the most obvious George Romero homage you can ever see. Like, it's like they were like, we have to do everything he did. It's like black and white, old school, like put in this, a couple people in this house and zombie thing. I just like you, I was like, by the end, I was like, okay.
It's about podcasters. I saw that description. I'm like, okay, you have my attention. Zombie movie involving a podcaster. Let's see what this goes. And it's like, well, it looks nice. The end.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, there's not more midnight movies. I love midnight movies.
I know. I honestly, you would love Together. I think you would. So Together stars Dave Franco and Alison Brie, who are they're a real life couple in real life, which believe it or not, many people did not know that when they saw it. Like, I talked to people at the festival who were like, I had no idea, and I was like, I don't even follow celebrity news, and I knew. It's directed by this Australian filmmaker named Michael Shanks, and he's the one who also did the short film a couple years ago called Rebooted, about this stop motion skeleton looking for work in Hollywood. I love this short film. This is his feature debut. He got these two. He kind of like started a friendship with Dave Franco and basically was like, they agreed to cast themselves together as a couple in the film. And the film is about them. There's only so much I want to say. I just think this is an awesome movie. They nailed it. Yeah. They got the whole, it's like a body horror about a codependency in a relationship. And the hint is that you can kind of tell that the title is body horror. They're starting to come together. The rest I'll leave to your imagination until you see it.
Interesting.
And it's so well done. The practical effects, it's not as gory as The Substance, but a lot of people reference it to The Substance because we're kind of in this like body horror, golden age.
It's because people that don't normally see horror movies saw The Substance, so that's the only thing they can reference.
True, but there are also but there are a great deal of really good body horror films. And this one kind of like knocked it out of the park for me, and I just had a blast with it. And you know, it goes without saying, but to reiterate, Franco and Brie together, because they're real life, their chemistry is like unquestionably great. And that works, but it also needs to work within the horror, and the horror works as well. I actually liked it more than some of the other body horrors I've seen because there's like a deeper mythology to it. And this director, like, honestly, like I watched this, it's the same thing with the Love Brooklyn director. I was like, give him whatever he wants. Like, let him make anything. This guy has such clear talent, such great ability to pull off any vision he wants that you're like, he's, I guess when I see so many films at a festival, you can tell a filmmaker who's like competent and able to put the script on screen versus a filmmaker who you're like, this guy's going to be the next big dude and you can't wait to see what else he does. And this guy falls into that latter category of like, okay, if this is, if he can rock this as his first feature, just like, oh my God, I can't wait to see what he does next.
All right. Well, looking forward to that one. I don't think it got picked, or at least I don't know it got picked.
No, that was one of them that got bought by Neon.
That was
one of the first sales of the festival. There we go. Yeah.
That tracks. Let's talk about Twinless, since you brought it up earlier. This film's from director and writer James Sweeney, who stars in the film as well with Dylan O'Brien. It's about two men who become basically friends during through a support group. The support group is for twins who lost their twin, essentially. So, you know, they were after, you know, any tragedy that befell twins, the support group that supports the remaining twin. It's a dark comedy, I guess you would say, comedy drama, is a way to put it. Yeah. And there's things that take place that kind of alter perception on how the story works or whatnot. This film became notable, yes, because it was aspects of it were leaked online involving Dylan O'Brien. And it's the kind of thing where it's the kind of thing that makes it harder for everybody when you want to like have this online component and then people are just going out of their way to like make it difficult and possibly threaten the nature of having online to begin with. Yeah. With all of that said, I liked this movie. Particularly because of Dylan O'Brien, who I think shows a lot of range in this film. But Alex, what do you think of it?
Yeah, I agree. It's a hard one to talk about without giving away a lot of it. And the spoilers, I know people say this is a spoiler, but the twists and turns, which is all I'll say, are interesting. And as you said, really change the dynamic of the film. I like it, but I don't love it.
Yeah,
and a lot of the conversations I've had after, because a lot of people loved it. I think it won Audience Award, didn't it? Yeah, I think it won the Audience Award.
What are you?
One of the conversations I've had with people is like both of the characters are kind of assholes, yet the film plays them as these kind of like, yeah, they're nice. They're just dealing with shit, which they are. But they're also like the main dude who's played by the director, who I thought also was very good. Mm-hmm. He's kind of a jackass in what he's doing. And like by the end of it, I was like, cool, this was fun. And you're supposed to see him as kind of a quote unquote hero. Not really. But through the story, he is the central character. He's the protagonist. And like by the end, I was like, wow, this guy's a jackass. But it doesn't take away from how and this is also what I love at a festival like Sundance, is how original it is. I've never seen this kind of story told before in this way. It is kind of dark in what I also found was a very depressing way. You're like, man, this guy is like lonely as fuck. Like, but also that's part of the story. That's part of the dynamic. And I kind of appreciate his it's cliche to say this, but his vulnerability of putting that into the film, because I feel it's very personal to him as something he's going through. And it works for the most part. It's enjoyable.
To go back to O'Brien for a second, what I like with this is just an aspect of his character is that he plays an idiot, essentially. Yeah, or at least he plays someone that's not the brightest. But he's also aware of it. He's aware that he's just like, that's just not my thing. Like, I'm not the smartest guy, and I'm aware of that.
Yeah.
And I think there's a way to play that could either be too much or, I don't know, it just doesn't feel authentic. He's very good at what that requires, I think, to like make that seem, especially when it comes to scenes that involve him having to be emotional about what's taking place and like how he registers it. It's not like he's not like developmentally challenged, that kind of. He's just like he's just not a bright guy. That's really what it comes down to. And it takes a smart actor to know how to play dumb, I think. So
yeah, I agree. And also make it like enjoyable to watch, like
endearing.
There's only so much dumb people I can take in a film, and this one I was like, I have no problem with it.
You're not watching like.
Well, I guess I'll just leave that, Alex.
Yeah, go.
Okay, the next one I want to bring up, I'm actually curious if you saw this before it also got pulled, was Train Dreams.
No, I didn't get to see that one.
Oh, Aaron, you're failing me. No, I actually missed it during the festival because there was no chance for me to fit it in the schedule. It was very weirdly timed. Like, they had three screenings at the beginning and then, like, nothing else. So I watched it at home. And I wish I would have seen it in the theater. It's basically, like, the easiest description is it's, like, Terrence Malick by way of a dude who's like a logger in the early days of America. I think it begins in the end of the 1800s, and he's like building railroads, and also he's a logger cutting down trees. Mm-hmm. And it kind of follows him through this part of his life where he's growing up and meets a woman and starts a family.
Good cast here. Joel Edgerton, Felicity Jones, Kerry Condon, Macy, exactly. Clifton Collins.
Okay. Yes. It's mainly the Joel Edgerton show. He is the – it's focused on him. I think I can't take credit for this because I think it came from David Ehrlich. It's the most Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward, Robert Ford-esque feeling film I've seen in a long time. Okay. Very beautiful Malick-esque shots of America and going through the forest. There's a very poetic narration over top of it discussing his life. It's based on a book.
So it's the same team behind Sing Sing, too. Yeah, I've heard of this.
Yeah, it's really stunning. I read some reviews and people said it's boring and not interesting, and I watched it thinking it would be boring, and I was like, this is not boring at all.
You're like, you're boring.
Yeah, it's a really mesmerizing, like, entrancing film that kind of, yes, okay, you're just, like, following a guy through his life, and he's just this kind of, actually very similar to Dylan O'Brien. He's kind of this, like, bumbling fool who's just a logger guy who doesn't say much. Mm-hmm. But you're intrigued by him as he the core theme of the film, which I think is a little bit different from the book, is that he watches America evolve and change over the like 60 years of his life. And so not only is it building trains, but eventually
fascinating.
Yeah, he kind of gets to this more not modern world, but like there's a scene with an airplane in it at one point, and there's this kind of like they start to not care about him anymore. And it starts out as this kind of like Wild West thing and turns into this more intriguing drama about not only growing up, but just how things change. And it was just like, I can say that I watched it with my parents and my mom, because I'm here in Salt Lake with them. My mom was like crying tears the whole time at the end. She's like, this is just what it's like to grow up in America. And I just was really moved by it too. I was really swept up in it, and I highly recommend it. For people who love cinema, it was bought by Netflix, so no one will be able to see it in the cinema, but see it when it comes on Netflix in however many moons that will take.
All right.
Sold.
Good. Abe, I'm coming back on the show when you've seen it, and we'll have to hear your opinion.
No, sold meaning I'm the CEO of Netflix, Alex, so I
bought it. Okay. Yeah. You're the one who paid $20 million for it. Got it.
Yeah, yeah. It's chump change. I can give you a check for it right now.
Can you please put it in theaters, though, CEO?
Yeah, you know, Greta has been doing it, so, you know, we're thinking about it.
Greta.
Okay, great. I'm holding you to this, Abe.
Let's go through some of these a little quickly, just to get past them. I saw Sunfish and Other Stories on Green Lake. Saw that one?
Good.
It's an anthology film, which I didn't realize wasn't it, because I don't go into any of these. I'm blind on all of them as I walk into them. So, like, watching this, I'm like, is this going to be the whole, like, it starts with this, like, you know, it's like a little teenage girl taking a boat out to sea, and then like her stepdad or uncle or what is it?
I think it's uncle,
right? He teaches her how to like use the little boat. And I'm like, is it gonna be like 90 minutes of just this? And I'm like, oh, okay. It's like, this seems pretty thin. And then it's like, oh, we've changed perspectives entirely. Oh, okay, it's an anthology movie. Way more sense as I got into it.
Each of the stories was like super different from each other too,
and I realized the story. It's like, well, it is called Sunfish and Other Stories on Green Lake. I'm like, okay, I see what you're doing here. Thank you for making it obvious to me until I saw it. I like this. It's very quaint. It's very nice. It's not too challenging necessarily, but again, nor that I necessarily require it to be. But I like that it's. When I see anthology films, I think of obviously like horror anthology, because that's mostly what I see when it comes to anthology films, or like. I don't even know what. Like, so, like, seeing something that's just so simplistic by comparison, it's very much just rooted in, like, everyday life kind of thing. Reminded me of what's like that HBO show High Maintenance that was on, where it's just, like, vignettes in New York, that kind of thing. It's like, this is nice. It's just all set, like, one summer on this lake. I enjoyed that. I had fun with it.
Yeah, me too.
See Omaha. Do you see Omaha?
Yes. Yes, I did.
With John Magaro. This one, the film deliberately withholds certain information from us, but essentially a father has lost his wife, he has two kids, and he's like, we're going on a road trip, as they're like getting evicted from this house. And we watch this whole play out with John Magaro just trying to be a dad and going to like, you know, stopping at convenience stores and trying to get by with like food stamps or what have you. And it all builds up to something as far as like what the end goal of this road trip is. But in the meantime, you're just watching this, you know, father kind of struggle doing what he can, just being on his own. I found this film frustrating because I knew it was holding back some key piece of information that it was going to inevitably have to reveal to me. And so regardless of how good John Magaro is, and we like John Magaro on this podcast, he's a good actor. Like, it only mattered so much because I couldn't hold myself from knowing that there's going to be something here and the film's just purposely not telling me something. So like I found the film okay. And then the other shoe drops, like, okay, well, now I get it. Was that satisfying? Is then the question I asked myself. I'm like, I guess so in terms of knowledge, but in terms of, like, me enjoying this film, I don't know. Like, I don't know if there's any ever reason to, like, ever watch this again once you kind of know what it's doing. Alex, what'd you think?
I loved it.
You loved it, of course.
Because it's so hard to talk about these without giving away everything, but the journey is beautiful. There's these little moments with the kids and the interactions as they're going on the road that I found the filmmaking engaging to watch more than the story. Because like you, by the time I got to the end, I'm like, I don't think anyone could watch this again after you get to the end. And there's almost like a strong point to it too. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you guys, don't forget this. Okay. But it's also like you have to admire the performance or the kids too. I don't know. I thought it was just really great filmmaking despite the heaviness of it.
Maybe if the kids were cuter. I'm kidding.
Aaron Neuwirth hates kids.
Put it on the post.
I did consider like the idea of what if they made a documentary out of this? Like, I wondered if that would have maybe helped me appreciate this, like the overall idea behind this story more. Because the film, like, I can agree with you as far as it's made well enough. I wouldn't say it stuck out to me necessarily. That's partially because I'm watching like four films in a day, so it's like, is it grasping me? But also that kind of speaks to the film. I'm not like retaining too much of it from a technical standpoint after having watched it. But you know, I don't hate this film by any means. I think it's certainly interesting to say the least and has good things in it. It was just more, I found the frustration hitting me a little harder than I would have liked.
Yeah,
in that regard. What's another one? Throw one at me.
Okay. Good, bad, what should I do?
Let's think of the good.
You know what? I really like this film, Lurker.
Lurker.
You heard of this? You know, I don't think it's online. It's another one that they didn't put online.
I've seen like it and as an option on you know, for festival goers. Yeah.
It's made by I think it's the guy's feature debut. The director's Alex Russell. And it stars a kind of unknown kid, Theodore Pellerin.
I've seen this face. I think so. Let's see. Theodore.
My wife is trying to tell me what he's been in. Okay.
Theodore Pellerin. Let me see.
He's in Beau Is Afraid.
Beau's Afraid is okay. The big one.
The director is one of a screenwriter on Beef, on the TV show.
Oh, okay.
But his directorial debut. And then the other main character that you would recognize is this guy, Archie Madden.
Yeah, he's in Gran Turismo and Saltburn.
He's super tall. He's the tallest character.
He's a tall guy, yeah.
So it's a very, again, to limited degrees, to not give away everything with every one of these films. It's a very similar tale, it's a very dark comedy to Ingrid Goes West. It's another cautionary tale about chasing fame and being obsessed. And so this kid, Theodore, the actor Theodore, he plays this kid who kind of like by random coincidence is able to befriend like suddenly this famous pop star musician played by Archie. And he kind of like works his way into his inner circle. And that happens pretty quickly in the beginning. And then you kind of like see how he's kind of obsessed with maintaining that relationship and the lengths he'll go to do these like really unsettling, freaky things to hold on to that connection.
Also like Saltburn.
Yeah. It's Saltburn meets Ingrid Goes West. It's like the...
I like all of this. I want to see this movie immediately.
So like many films, this could go wrong or it could be boring or annoying or something, but it's not. It's like it's also extremely dark, but extremely dark comedy. So you're like, I was giggling the whole time, like, this is so effed up, man. Like, but you're like, this is damn good. It's well made. And I am still a fan of cautionary tales about obsession with fame, because I think we need more of them, because people are obsessed with celebrities right now in an unhealthy way. Mm-hmm. And this film is kind of like another slap you in the face reminder, like, you freaking idiots. Like, what are you doing? Like, look what's going to happen to you. You know? So it really got me. It really stuck out and not my favorite of the fest, but like really well done. And I think a lot of people are gonna have fun with it when it comes out. I would say controversially way better than Saltburn.
Okay. Well, I'm quite the fan of Saltburn, so
you've got me excited about this movie. I mean, it's not Saltburn.
I get to make the distinction, but it's funny that you mentioned the premise and the fact that it has Archie. It's like, oh, all right.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm gonna bring up Atropia. Mm-hmm. This one,
winner of the Grand Jury Prize.
The Grand Jury Prize winner. Yeah, I forgot that. I didn't realize that until after I watched it. Like, that film? exactly. I think it's... I'm kind of still developing my thoughts on it. Because, like, on the one hand, I think it does some things well. On the other hand, I think it, like, really gets bogged down in the middle is, like, what it's trying to be. But it stars Alia Shawkat, among others, Callum Turner, Tim Heidecker has a small role in there. Jane Levy pops in. Channing Tatum pops in for like a hot minute, making me think, did he lend money to this movie? Because that's the only reason it seems like he'd be here. it's a clever concept as far as it's about this like fictional city of Atropia, which is it's made for war games, essentially. It's set during Bush era, W. Bush era. And it's a city built in like outside of Barstow, essentially like in like the desert in America, to replicate what it is to live in Iraq. And they hire all these different actors, including Alia Shawkat, who's an actor there, to like basically like be extras that perform in this city while you have actual, you know, soldiers occupying the area and like trying to get an idea of what it's going to be like when they get deployed overseas. And it works as kind of a war satire. And that's the tricky thing, right? Because it's not easy to do satire. It's written and directed by Haley Gates, who's also an actress. And there's some really clever stuff in there as far as showing me something that I frankly just haven't seen before in a movie. I think that's a really clever idea for a movie, to set it within this kind of a place and say, like, what's this like? What is it supposed to be? And on the one hand, it can be broad at times, where you have Alia Shawkat, who's trying to like, she's basically like given up her life to do this. And so she still wants to like find fame somehow. And so she like will like play herself over the top to get attention from the other soldiers or whatnot. And like try to like find things that make for like broad comedy moments. And then it also wants to like have something to say about what it is that these soldiers are going through, whether or not it's the right way to prepare them for, you know, being deployed overseas. Like, that stuff can work, but if there's better writing to go with it. And that's where I think the film kind of falters. I think it, especially again in the middle, where it's trying to balance, I think, too many things at once. And as a result, as you talked about, like, movies that can be boring, I did kind of find myself drifting, because I'm like, it's not really finding its way through any of this until it gets to, like, its third act, where, like, it perks up because there's more happening.
Sure.
So it's like, it's good as far as that's a novel idea for a film, but I can't say that I loved it. Alex, what do you think of it?
I'm right there with you. I like the second half, I was like, where are we even going? What's going on? Like you said, there were moments where I was like, I don't even know why I'm following them anymore. I was a bit confused by it. And it's exactly what you said. It's clever, it's interesting, but it just doesn't amount to much. I honestly, not to throw the jury under the bus, but like literally everyone I've talked to was like, this film won? Like, no one has like a rave review of it. And I'm like, wow. I guess they just went for the creativity of it. I don't know.
It needs like a bigger plot. Like, if it was like a Three Kings, where there's like a goal in mind that the film had beyond just saying, remember this time period? Wasn't that wild? Like, it doesn't really have anything beyond that. So it's like, But I mean, no one's wrong as far as saying it is a neat idea. Like, it's not bad at being what it is. It just doesn't really have much to guide it, which is a shame. So
for sure, it reminded me of a documentary a couple years ago at Sundance. It's about racism in the 1960s, because it's like in the 1960s they set up fake towns that they practice riot control for the upheaval in the 1960s. Do you remember this one? It was a doc a couple years ago.
That sounds familiar. I can't if you want.
Yeah, yeah. We'll find it after the show. I'm like, I'll put it in the notes. But it's a similar thing because, like, you're like, wow, they're like Americans are so crazy that they actually built replica cities to do this, like, fascistic training in. Like, oh, we'll have the military go shoot fake actors just so they can learn how to do it in Iraq. And it happened in the 60s, and it's happening again now, and they're doing it. But that's...
We'll talk about another film that I think also won like an audience award or something. East of Wall. It won something. Oh, okay. It's from writer director Kate Beecroft. I don't know if the story itself is actually true, but like the actors involved, with the exception of Scoot McNairy and Jennifer Ely, who are very good at just playing, you know, being good actors. It involves a woman named Tabitha Zimiga. Who breaks horses. Like, she has a big ranch. She has horses. She has a bunch of kids. Her husband has recently passed, and now she's dealing with like both managing this land, keeping the horses together, keeping the family together. Scoot McNairy plays like a big rich guy that wants to come in and buy the land. Jennifer Ely's like it's her mother, right? Yeah, it's her mother. It's not hard to compare this to something like The Rider for very, very obvious reasons. I would venture to say I like this movie just as much as The Rider, largely because the acting's stronger. I think The Rider is perhaps more visually distinctive just because Chloe Zhao just has that ability. But it's not like this movie's bad looking either. It makes a big deal about these... these Badlands area with these like scars in the earth that look really unique and whatnot. And I think if anywhere the film falters because it doesn't do enough with that, I think, but it still brings it up in a way where it's like, well, that's interesting. But because you have this main actor, this main woman who just happens to playing herself, Tabitha, she's a great find. Like I don't know what drove, I didn't like watch a Q&A to like see more of what like drove, this family to being like, yeah, let's play ourselves in a movie, but it's really strong work from all involved. And they're all like, they have a lot of natural screen energy, which you don't always get when you're like, let's put a family on camera and see what happens. For like for a feature film, not a documentary. I liked this one quite a bit. I was very pleased by what it delivered. And if the only real hiccup is the fact that I've seen a movie like this, that's The Rider or even Nomadland to an extent, as far as the kind of DIY-ness to it and like the naturalness and everything, that can only be a fault so much because the film itself is the film. Alex, what did you think of it?
That's actually one of them I didn't see.
You didn't see East of Wall. Okay.
Yeah. But everything you said is what I've heard, so I really want to see it at some point.
It has a lot of identity, a lot of character, which I appreciated. Like, you really, whether or not this Tabitha ever acts again, no idea, but I was really excited by seeing just a new screen presence. And again, her kids are, all of them are her kids and they're just good. Like, I don't know what to like. I was impressed. Like, watching the movie, like, are these all real? And then the credits go by. They're like, oh yeah, they're just playing themselves. Good job. And you see a lot of horse action as well. Like a lot of like breaking horses and riding horses. She like, apparently she like has a whole TikTok page where she's like selling horses on them and shows, she's showing off the horses by showing them all do stunts and whatnot. It's like, this is good stuff. It's like all this. Cool. Yeah. East of Wall. It was a good one. I liked it quite a bit.
Right.
Like everything you say, I'm like, man, I should have watched this.
Well,
some of them I miss. And then like later they're like, it was incredible. And you're like, son of a gun. Three years later till I finally get to see it.
I like that I can watch one movie, and of the 52 you watched, it's the one that you didn't, apparently.
Well, like I said, I can't see everything. There are a few I have to skip.
What's another one, Alex?
I want to talk about The Wedding Banquet.
The remake of the Ang Lee's film.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. I think the director's name is Andrew Ahn.
Yeah.
Who last made...
Fire Island.
Yeah, which was good. I like
Fire Island, yeah.
This is, to me, his best work yet. I, like, flipped for it. I love when I go into a film at a festival. You know, of course, I don't know what I'm about to see, but kind of not looking forward to it. Kind of like, I'm just here to see the screening. And, you know, by the end of it, I'm like, this was amazing. And I have not seen the Ang Lee film.
I was going to ask if you've seen the original.
Yeah.
It's actually very good.
There was a friend I just saw earlier today, and he was like, I love the Ang Lee movie. But he... I think he told me it's much different. It's more, both of this makes sense for both of them. He said the Ang Lee is very centered in its time, and I think it was 1993.
Yeah.
And it's very representative of that time and the harder LGBTQ restrictions. This is more centered around 2025, and very
which
much
makes sense. Yeah. That's what I'm excited about seeing, because like this, there's good reason to remake a movie like this.
Yeah, so, exactly. Yeah. And it's set in Seattle, it adds a fourth character to the mix, which, so there's basically the simple gist of it is there's like two LGBTQ couples. There's two, a lesbian couple, and then there's a gay couple. Mm-hmm. It's actually got a great cast. I should pull this up before I start talking about it. Bowen Yang, Lily Gladstone, Kelly Marie Tran, this new Korean guy, Han Ji-chan.
Ji-chan, yeah.
Joan Chen, and the other, she plays the Korean grandma of the movie, Yoon Yoo-jung, who won an Oscar a few years ago for Minari. Mm-hmm. And Lily Gladstone, if I didn't mention her. Oh, I did.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So the cast is incredible. Actually,
it's got a really great like Asian cast. Like, look at all these people are like in stuff that I know.
Oh, and like their dynamic, like I didn't even realize it was these people until the end of the movie. I was like, oh my god, they're amazing.
That's Bowen Yang.
No, but it's just the freshness of what you're seeing is like they felt. I know this. It's always cliche to say this, but sometimes it's true. They're lived-in characters where you're like, sure. "This is they've been in a relationship for decades."
It's true. It's true.
Stop this film. Yeah. And it's really it's just so fresh and funny. But most importantly, what won me over is how emotional it is. I was like crying a couple times more in this film than I did any other Sundance film, and not because of like, oh, something tragic happens, but because you're just like moved by
their
like what they're portraying in this struggle with their relationships. And this kind of funny, if you know the original film, this twists and turns of what's going on and how they're trying to, there's like a sham marriage, but it's also because they're trying to do this thing with the pregnancy. And then they're trying to figure out how to live on their own in a certain way and also balance all these things. And the two mother performances too are phenomenal. Like the Korean granny, like I was telling everyone, I was like, this Korean granny, I mean, she already won an Oscar, obviously, but, but like just melted me. It was just so good. And I was just like felt like I came out of the cinema high on cinema, which happens a few times at Sundance, not often. And I was like, this is one of my favorite films of the festival. Most other people seem to love it too, because I was a little bit worried that someone would say, oh, it's not as good as the Ang Lee, which I don't know. Some people will say that, but I think they have a hit on their hands with this. The cast will draw people in, and then once they start watching it, they're going to be like, this is such a – it's a feel-good movie despite the heavy emotions of it. But you come out of it feeling really good. And also the LGBTQ representation in it is, like, important. It makes – it's not only a part of the plot, but, like, you feel like you are kind of more – gained insight and appreciation – through the filmmaking, which is a testament to Andrew Ahn because he's a gay filmmaker and he wants to portray this in really powerful ways. And I was just like really shook by it. I was really impressed by it.
Oh, on my list.
Yes.
Yeah. I was already looking forward to that. So good to hear that it's
I think it opens in March.
A Billington too, so. Recommendation.
So. Yeah. Yeah. Well, again, like sometimes I think like, oh, it's not going to be good. I'm like, oh, okay. This is the one I got to tell Aaron about.
Very good. What about Sorry Baby? Which was the the big A24 acquisition, that came in, which makes a ton of you watch this movie is like this is obviously an A24 movie.
I honestly thought it was, and then they bought it. And I was like, oh, they didn't already have it.
This is from writer director Eva Victor, who also stars in the film. She plays it takes place over like a few years, but she starts as like I guess like a grad student essentially, and becomes like a professor over time. This is one again where like I don't know what these are going in, so I don't know like how to like what you're supposed to reveal about what's taking place or whatnot. But essentially, she goes through a traumatic event, and the film kind of traces what her life is like both before and after things occur. There's a couple other people in this film. Naomi Ackie plays like her best friend. Lucas Hedges plays a neighbor. John Carroll Lynch shows up for a hot minute. I'm like, that's great. I like seeing John Carroll Lynch and things. The film, it's a comedy drama essentially, and I think I'll be curious what you have to say about this, because I do think I would say awkward, but it has like a, even like cringy is not the right word, but it certainly has a very distinctive voice of like how it's putting the comedy out there, because there's parts where I laughed out loud with like what it's dealing with. And some of the comedy is just like, because it's comedy for comedy's sake. And some of it's like rooted in the trauma that she experienced, but it's like trying to make that not necessarily funny, but certainly like presenting situations that feel, you know, they push the tragicomic aspect, I guess, essentially. And then there's also the drama of it all, which is quite affecting and rough for reasons, but I think artfully done as far as like how you're experiencing what she's going through without like having to like delve too far into things. And overall, no, I just like the movie. I think it's one of the stronger films that I mean, but I'm trying to think about like what my favorite movie of these are, but it's certainly high up in the list of the films I saw. And I could see, you know, I could see why it has, I know it got a lot of praise. I've seen a lot of people say it's their favorite of the fest, and I can see where that comes from. But I liked it quite a bit. I thought it was very good.
Me too. I'm kind of right with you. It's funny because it's one of these films where I'm like, we're not women, so we don't have a true. Not that I can't talk about it, but I think it's meant for women to be moved by and affected by more than me and you.
Sure, there's a relatable element that we're just not going to be privy to.
Exactly, and it speaks so much to Eva Victor's. Like not only her life, because it's very personal to her, but also what she's trying to say with it and what she's trying to express. Like the intro, they said the person introducing it at the festival was like, call it, it has a very distinct point of view. And I was like, not only just women, but I'm like, she has something to say about how this situation was handled and what was going on with her. But I also do think, as you said, the comedy is both sometimes a bit strange, but clever. And I think because it's her comedy, I mean, not only writer, director, but herself starring in it.
Uh-huh.
I think she's just kind of giving her own taste of what her comedy is. And I think that's going to lead to her having an incredible career, because she's kind of like, almost like someone like Awkwafina has established herself as this style of comedy is to her. And she was able to convey that in this particular topic in a way that is new and that we haven't particularly seen before. While I don't come out of it thinking, oh, the comedy was the best part about it, there's a lot to it that's like really hits you hard. And I'm kind of like you. Like, I didn't, it's not my number one of the fest, but
I get what the praise
really
comes
good.
From.
Yeah.
This is the one that was produced by Barry Jenkins, by the way.
Okay. And it's just like there's the moment in it where something happens, like the way they shoot it. I was like, that's really cool. I thought that was really good.
Okay.
A couple of interesting moments like that. Where it's not just, I get a little bit tired of films that are like creative in the screenwriting, but not creative in the filmmaking. Sure. And this kind of has everything creative. Like there's a lot of really smart choices beyond just the writing and beyond just the humor and beyond what she's trying to portray in it. There's a lot of smart choices in it.
I agree. And it is the kind of thing where I want to see where someone like this and their voice goes next, in the same way that like a Cooper Rafe, with the exception Cooper Rafe, whose films I like, Cha-Cha Real Smooth and what, Shit House, they're comedies with drama, but the drama, you know, dealing with like men in their 20s and 30s, like, all right, I mean, there's nothing that's as dramatic compared to like what a woman in the same age range is going through, and obviously there's more just social relevance that's worth speaking up to. However, I do think the kind of the lean into comedy that they have had a familiar feel. That's why I was thinking about it. Trying to think of other like comparable recent, you know, artists that kind of put their voice out there that feels unique in its own way.
It's funny you mentioned him, because he actually had a Sundance presentation.
I was wondering if he had
it's called Hal and Harper, I think. But I didn't watch it because it's listed under the series section. And I wasn't quite sure if it's like the first two episodes, because the running time on the system said 112 minutes. And I was like, that can't be the whole series, is it? But it got good reviews. I just didn't have time to get to it. I'm really curious about it.
Yeah. What else?
I have a bunch of documentaries I want to mention.
Sure,
Just because I am a doc nerd, and I know it's not the most exciting subject for a lot of people, especially at Sundance. There's enough features to watch, narrative features. But I'll rattle off my favorites, and then there's one I want to talk about as like my highlight. Actually, one of my favorite films of the whole festival. So a lot of my favorites that I would recommend to anyone who loves documentaries. Cutting Through Rocks, it's an Iranian doc about this woman. Coexistence My Ass, it's about a Israeli comedian, a stand-up comic. She's really great. It's about her and her experience right now in life. Middletown, which is by Jesse Moss.
I watched Middletown. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was fantastic. People said it's a little long. It is. I think it's like 2 hours, but like really long, moved by it.
But it,
yeah.
But it did have a lot to like say. Which yeah, exactly. I appreciated. Yeah.
Prime Minister, which is about the New Zealand Prime Minister. It's a bit standard, but it's a good film. The Zodiac Killer Project is interesting. Kind of a breakdown of true crime.
That's what I figure I'll see on like Netflix in a month, and I'm like, I can wait on this one.
Exactly.
I didn't get to see Seeds, which I really wanted to see, and I just didn't have time.
Yeah, me too. I didn't miss it. I missed it too. It was just like 2 hours, and I'm like, I don't want to sit down and dive into 2 hours.
I'm
right
trying
now.
To like cram as many as I can. I'm like, I don't have time for an extra half hour.
Yeah. The Sally Ride doc was really good.
Oh.
Called Sally.
Another one I feel will be like on Hulu in a month, and I'm like,
it will be. I watched this one last night called Deaf President Now, which is fantastic. It's about these like kids at a deaf university that protested to get their university a deaf president. It was really moving and really incredible.
That sounds great.
Yeah, it is. You need to see it. I think like Apple has this little, again, it'll be on a few months on Apple.
That's why I don't rush, because I know the docs will be fine, essentially. Like, I'll be able to see them at some point and be probably happy with that.
There's two cancer docs. The one that won the audience award, which I forget the name of right now. I gotta check. And then the other one is Andre is an Idiot. And let me see what this other one is called. It won something, or maybe it was like it won the Festival Favorite Award, which I found was very strange. I didn't actually see it. Come See Me in the Good Light.
Okay.
And it's like about two poets, and one of them is diagnosed with cancer. Andre is an Idiot is the one I saw. It's also about the main guy's like this kooky dude named Andre, and he gets diagnosed with colon cancer.
Yeah.
And it's a film about him getting like recommending everyone get a colonoscopy. Sundance, I wrote him a review. The Sundance is not is pretty used to showing not only cancer films but cancer docs and cancer comedies. It's a very common trend with them. And this one was just like a really smart, well done, and really funny. You know, I know it's funny to say you laugh at cancer, but it's like, this is the point of the film, is he's like trying to address
like,
it, you know?
The main image, it's like, I have a sense of what this is trying to do already, which...
Yeah, exactly.
Which would be
it's good. It's worth a watch, and you will absolutely book a colonoscopy after. And then my favorite of the festive documentaries is a film called Folk Tales, which is from two familiar filmmakers who've been to Sundance like five times already in the past. I always forget their names. Heidi Ewing and Rachel Grady. They made a bunch of hard-hitting docs over the years. This Folk Tales is about a Norwegian folk school. And essentially, there's like a couple hundred of them in Scandinavia. And the school is kind of like, you can send your kid there for a gap year. And what they do is they go to the school, which is like up in the beyond the Arctic Circle. And they kind of learn solo, self-sustaining life skills, like how to survive in the wilderness, how to build a fire. And the main gist of the documentary and what the kids are learning is dog sledding. So they have to learn how to take care of a dog, and they have to do this. The filmmaking is phenomenal. Like you would think, oh, how are they going to tell this in an exciting way? But it's just like ripping, and you're like, the cinematography is like so good, so good. I was just like crying tears looking at it, you know. And it's also the other thing I thought is, this isn't in the past. That's actually set in modern times, following these like, you know, young modern teenage kids. One of them is great because he doesn't even know how to build a fire, and you're like, wow, poor kid. And he kind of goes through, it's a coming of age film too, so they kind of learn to grow up through this experience. And although it's an American doc made by American filmmakers, it's very infused with Norwegian and Scandinavian concepts. There's like a poem they talk about mythology throughout regarding like a tree and what's going on, and it's really, really stunning film. Like, and the premiere was so powerful. Like, you could just feel everyone just like crying and being emotional. Wow. And like, and this is to me a film that transcends being a doc to something that people just need to go see in theaters. Mm-hmm. Like, every once in a while, there's a couple of them every year where I'm like, I have to convince non-documentary people that they have to see this just to see what a documentary really can be, and how incredible it can be.
Okay. Well, good. Glad you got the talk about the docs a bit here, because I certainly have interest in getting a chance to see some of these.
Yeah. I'm glad you watched them too. I mean, there are people who I know, I won't name names, who come to Sundance and they like straight up tell me, they're like, oh, I don't watch docs. Like then they just completely ignore. Yeah, Abe's over here booing. Yeah,
documentaries one of my favorite genres.
Yeah, and it, you know, I get it. When I first started out too, I found a lot of them really boring, and I kind of felt like I'm wasting my time. And then it's simply like the moment you come across a really great one, you're like, oh, yeah, this is what documentary filmmaking is about. The problem is you never know which one of those is going to be. And well, even, sure, even I mean, one that I can recommend to someone, they'll watch and be like, I found that boring.
You know, so film festivals, of course, but at the same time, it's also an easy representation of what a film festival can do, where you have people that are pretty much scrapping something together for a documentary of all things, where you don't know, you know, when you start that kind of a project, you don't know what the result's going to be necessarily. It could be something different than when you start, and you're getting by based on, you know, whatever funds you can put together, filming things, doing research. Then you come to, you know, manage to get yourself into a Sundance Film Festival. It's like, yeah, that's the ultimate kind of journey you can make as an independent filmmaker.
Yeah. And I've seen Sundance to me is great because I've seen so many amazing docs. Like another one that I've always recommended people is called Finders Keepers. And it's about this, like this dude found a leg and like kept it. And you're like, what? And then you watch this and you're like, this is incredible. Cause like the storytelling around what is going on with this weird leg that this guy found is like, it's nuts. And it's like, this is what I love about Sundance is like nowhere else. I don't know how many other festivals play that kind of kooky doc as opposed to the more political or straightforward, like the Prime Minister one I mentioned, you know, very straightforward, very interesting, but if it's just a very linear presentation of her life and what she went through and that kind of stuff, I find interesting and good, but not like totally innovative and incredible like I want to find with docs.
I hear you. Anything else we can go? I feel like any other movie I have here is like just it's not as good as the doc conversation we were just having. Like I don't want to talk about like shitty movies before I get out of here.
No, the only other one I'll mention, one more I loved, and then I do want to hear if there's any you were really against, because I have like three.
Okay.
But the other one I want to talk about, because everyone will ask about, is If I Had Legs I'd Kick You.
So, yeah.
I heard of that. I didn't see it.
Yeah, I think I saw your tweet on it or your retweet.
Because it's not online, but it was an A24 film.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially Night Bitch meets Uncut Gems. I can't take credit for that comparison, but that is the best way to describe it. In that it's about a mother struggling with motherhood and dealing with that like extreme stress and pressure. And it feels like Uncut Gems because it's like set over a couple of days where she's dealing with this, just like the child's this and this is that and this is happening. And you're like, ah. And the best part about it is that Conan O'Brien.
Oh, this plays, is the Conan one. Okay.
Yeah, he plays this like therapist who's her coworker, and he's such an asshole in it, but he's great.
Yeah.
It's a damn good film. Of course, I like it more than Night Bitch because Night Bitch is flawed. But also just really, again, what Sundance should be about, something I've never really seen before in terms of filmmaking and how they're depicting this stressful struggle that this mother is going through. I have a little bit of problems at the end. If you've seen it, we can talk about it. But until you have, I don't want to talk about that. But other than that, I thought it was a really great film. And it will obviously be talked about by a lot of people when it comes out.
It's produced by a Safdie as well, so there you go.
Yeah. Okay. I saw that in the credits. I was like, of course. I was like, is it their natural thing now to make everything a very stressful movie if the Safdies get involved? I don't know. Even Oppenheimer's stressful, and he's in there. One of them is in there.
All right. I mean, there's some other things that I've seen that I like, okay. Ricky.
I thought it was okay. Yeah, very okay.
That's where it's like, it's a good lead performance. I think the film's just a little guideless in what it's about a person that went to jail when he was 15, tried as an adult. So he lost basically half his life because he's 30. Mm-hmm. It's a good emphasis on the difficulties of getting out of prison and like dealing with that kind of thing. It's just, I think the film doesn't really have the story to support what it's trying to accomplish overall.
Mm.
What's the actor's name? He's in stuff that I like.
Is this like Stefan James guy?
Yeah. Stefan James from Beale Street. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's see what else. Do you see Plain Clothes?
I tried to get through it and I was like, this is not for me. To be honest with you, didn't like it. I didn't like this. There's like this VHS style. It switches back and forth all the time. I'm like, this is not working.
Yeah, I think the end kind of justifies what it's going for, but I overall was like, I'm not super into this, but I'm trying. It's set in the 90s. It's about an undercover cop who like basically does entrapment on gay men by like signaling to them that they should be doing something in the bathroom. Then they like immediately go and arrest them, which I'm thinking that seems illegal. Like, this doesn't seem like a proper way to do things. Regardless, it's kind of like, it's okay. DJ Ahmet. Did you see DJ Ahmet?
Oh, yeah. I liked it. I thought it was cool. I thought it was some creative ideas to it. Very depressing, but cool.
It's a nice little coming of age story set in Macedonia.
Yeah.
I like
his rebellious plans. Like they're cool what he pulls off to like kind of mess with his town.
Yeah. There's a climax that occurs and I'm like, that's
fun.
Yeah,
it was.
And then Bubbles and Squeak.
You watched this.
This one.
Sadly, you watched this.
Yeah, this is the one where I'm like, I probably could have not watched this and been fine. But it's with what, Hamish Patel?
Yeah.
And what's her name? From Barry.
Sarah Goldberg.
Thank you. Sarah Goldberg. They play like a couple that they go on the run for ridiculous reasons. Matt Berry is playing Werner Herzog, essentially chasing them, which is in itself very funny because it's Matt Berry and he's doing a Herzog impression. It's like, okay. And there's a lot of other like recognizable people that you see throughout. The film's like the dialogue is in the style of like a Lanthimos type of movie, as far as like the very upfront, like lack of emotion delivery of a lot of the dialogue, which I found to be interesting, but it's another scenario where when you see other people do that, you can see just how good Yorgos Lanthimos is at making that work in his features versus when others try to imitate him.
Yes, unfortunately.
I didn't hate this movie, but I was also like, I could have done something else with my time.
I was like borderline starting to hate it because I was also like waiting for it to be anything more.
Do anything more, yeah.
Yeah, because it had so much hype. It was like, oh, the Cabbage movie. Everyone's going to see the Cabbage movie. So you go see this Cabbage movie, and then you're like, what? And one of the conversations among many critics in Sundance this year was this, that a lot of films felt like interesting one-note concepts, like this one. You're like, oh, the Cabbage, they can't bring cabbage in. And then just nothing really happens with that. And they don't really have any creative ideas to go do anything more with it. And you watch 90 more minutes of the movie and you're like you said, you're like, what did you made me sit through this? Why?
There's some visual gags that I really enjoyed, including Sarah Goldberg's legs, which will make sense if you see it. Otherwise, it's like, whatever.
Yeah.
That's all I got. That I want to talk about. What are
some... you mentioned a lot of my least favorites. I also, another one that people are going to hate me for not liking is a film called Oh Hi. I watched it a few days ago here, and it's like, I don't want to give away the whole concept, but basically, it's about a girl who is sleeping with a guy, and she discovers pretty quickly in the beginning that it's not a real date, it's a situationship with Molly Gordon and Logan Lerman. This is the couple. And then she freaks out. And I was like, oh, cool concept. But it doesn't, it's literally takes place in one place, one house. And I just like the humor did not work for me. I found the whole concept annoying. Again, I was like, what are you doing with this? Which it doesn't do anything with this. It reminded me a lot of Cat Person, which I really did not like, which is why people will not like that I don't like this one, because they loved Cat Person. They were also like, oh, you don't understand. This is what the experience is like for young women. I'm like, is it?
Even if that's the case, that doesn't necessarily make it a good movie automatically, because that was also my reaction to Cat Person. We're like, okay.
I just remember coming out of that at Sundance 2 years ago, and all these women were like, this is the best movie because it's exactly my life and my experience. And I'm like, you burned down a house? Like, what did you do? And a spoiler on that one. And Ohio, it's not the same story or concept or anything, but similarly annoying young person vibes from it that just bothered me. But I know it'll get appreciated by certain viewers when it comes out.
Well, I like this cast, and you're an old man at heart, so I'm still going to watch it and see what I think.
You tell me I was wrong. Yeah. And you know the one we started at the beginning that I re-mentioned is Peter Hujar's Day, this 74-minute from Iris.
Say this title slower so I can understand this. What is it?
Peter Hujar's Day. Peter Hujar. Everyone's laughing at me here. The guy's name is Peter Hujar. He's a photographer.
Okay.
And it's literally about the whole film's all 74
Peter Hujar's Day. Got it. That's what I was like. Is it like one long last name? Yeah, okay, got
because
it.
Because he's literally for the entire film recalling his day. Like there's like an interview. Like this woman comes in to have a chat with him and kind of interviews him, but it's not mm-hmm. one sit down. It's like over the course of a day. So it's over the course of that day. And then she asks him about this day, and he tells you about this day. It's set in like the '70s, I think.
Yeah, 74. I see. Yeah.
And with Ben Whishaw, and it's really like the performances are good, but you're just you know, if you really want to get a better sense of it, read the Vulture article. That's the headline is the best film of Sundance is two people talking the entire time. That's what okay. it is. It's like, right. Which I don't agree with, but I was like, if anyone's going to talk about it properly, that's probably a better review to read than mine because it understands it better than I did. I was like nodding off a few times, like, ugh, they're talking about his day. It was him just being like, oh, I went to hang out with Ginsburg. And he just like was making a sandwich and the sandwich didn't turn out. And so then he got a phone call and I was like,
if you're telling me Paddington can't make that compelling, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, I got to check this out and see for myself.
If only it was Paddington, I think it would be a much better movie. Serving marmalade sandwiches in the middle of his conversation about his day with Ginsburg.
All right. Is that it? Is that all the stuff you want to talk?
Yeah, I'm sure there's like one or two I forget, but I think those are the most important ones. I saw the Legend of Ochi, this A24 one with the.
I know that's coming out soon. Yeah,
yeah, it was cute. It was fun. It's very it's a 15-page script that's filled with beautiful visuals to make it 90 minutes. Like it's literally there's like six scenes that they actually have dialogue. The rest of it is just like her running around with this cute little creature. Really visually incredible, and I think a lot of people are going to be pissed that there's nothing more to it when they go see it because they're going to be like, "Oh, A24 should have had a better film." But like, it's another one of these where you're like, you're impressed by the filmmaking, but you're kind of like, "Could please go back to a script doctor and work on this a little bit longer because you could have something better to it."
Go to the Sundance Lab.
Yeah, I mean, the interesting thing is I used to think, oh, if you go through the Sundance Lab, especially the screenwriting and directing lab, you come out with something incredible. Like a lot of them I've seen recently have been like. I'm always like, was it worse and they got it to this level? Like, what? How bad was it before they went through the labs?
Is that a physical place, the Sundance Lab? It is. Like, there's an actual, like, in Sundance, there's, like, an actual place.
It's actually, I would, despite me mocking it right now, I would actually say it's really cool because the concept of it is that the actual Sundance Resort, which Bobby Reds, as you love to
call
it.
Bobby
Reds, used to own, which he doesn't own anymore. He sold it. But it takes place there. And so it's kind of like the Sundance Institute, which is the nonprofit organization that runs the film festival. During the rest of the year, when it's not January, one of the things they're doing is running these labs. And so what they do is they bring out, like I think it's like 8 to 10 various talented people to this resort. And they give them a week-long, or I think it's a week-long course. Mm-hmm. And in this course, not only is it brainstorming, but it's also community development. It's meeting people. They bring in a lot of other talent who help them work on things. It's a workshop too. You kind of present your film, you work on it, you get feedback, you develop it. There's obviously different ones for screenwriters, directors, and different paths. I even think there's a cinematography one now. And I do think it is, especially if you're an up and coming filmmaker of some kind, I'm sure it's a life changing, incredible thing to go through. Does that mean your film is good at the end? I don't know. But nonetheless, I think, especially when you think about what you do the rest of the year when you're not running a film festival, I think this is the kind of thing that benefits filmmakers beyond, hey, here's your film. There's something more that you really get
substantive,
out of this.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah, no, I'm always kidding. I'll be curious if they do. Will they move that? Will that go to become the Cincinnati Lab in the years to come? Or like,
yeah, well, it's funny that they've always done it at the resort anyway. But I guess it's in the summer they can do.
I assume it's its own thing, and yeah, it's also not 10,000 people occupying a ski resort. It's eight people in a room. Well, very good, Alex. I was not able to go to Sundance, of course, but I can tell you I'll be going to the Santa Barbara Film Festival this week.
Oh, cool, nice.
So I'll be seeing my share of films myself. with less snow and more sun. But we'll go from, we'll see how that turns out as well. I'm curious if there's any overlap. I haven't really had a chance to check the schedule as of yet, but we'll see.
Yeah, one day I do hope to get you to Sundance, although now it'll be like Cincinnati or bowling.
Oh, yeah, we'll meet definitely Cincinnati for sure. We'll go bowling or whatever they do.
Meet me in Cincinnati. It's a great documentary. We should make it.
Yeah. Meet me in Cincinnati. Yeah, there we go. That'll be the Out Now movie.
Yeah.
An Out Now production.
Exactly. On TV.
Alex Billington, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Alex.
Sure. Thanks very much. Appreciate it.
Happy to have you on. Happy to go over the Sundance Film Festival with you. Where can people find more of you online?
Well, all the usual places. FirstShowing.net. I'm on Blue Sky now as Alex B. Dot whatever it is.
Right.
Blue Sky. Social.app. Follow me or whatever. And of course, I'm still on Twitter/X/ whatever this crap is at First Showing, and on Letterboxd as usual.
Good thing we have show notes to really clear that up for people.
They're going to be like, what did he just say?
But no, happy to have here as always. Value the time they were able to give us for while you're spending time away with your, sneaking back into America and spending time with your family. you can find all the other episodes out there today, but all the places you find podcasts and all the socials and everything. But yeah. That's going to do it for this the special bonus Sundance recap episode. The listeners, check out some of these movies. Tell us what you think, if you have a chance, when they actually come out or what have you. But yeah, that's going to do it for now. So until next time, so long.
And goodbye. Now it's hard to connect, but the way